Good evening, everyone. As you may recall, for the last 13 episodes of this season, we've basically just been discussing how mental illness was diagnosed, especially in the last few episodes. Despite covering literally decades of work in this season, there's been remarkably little talk of actual treatments, besides putting patients in asylums or desperate attempts at treatments that simply didn't work, or even made things worse. Even as psychiatry stumbled its way through psychoanalysis and the creation of the DSM, the only real treatment for the severely mentally ill was to place them in an institution and hope for spontaneous remission, which was basically where patients got better on their own. For most of human history, severe mental illness was basically a life sentence of terrible suffering. But that is finally going to change, although admittedly the first hint of promise was way before the 70s, so we're going to go back in time a little bit. The first spark of hope in the fight to truly treat mental illness came in 1917. You might recall from some of our past episodes that syphilis was unfortunately a relatively common disease of this time period, and also that syphilis, if left untreated, will cause severe neurological symptoms, as the parasite burrows into the brain and causes symptoms similar to those of schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. Since syphilis as a disease was still untreatable at the time, these folks with these severe psychological symptoms also ended up in asylums. In one such asylum in Austria, one Julius Wagner Jorig made an interesting observation. That year, one of his patients, who was suffering from syphilis-induced psychosis, fell ill with a fever unrelated to her syphilis, and upon recovering from her fever, she was restored to normal mental health. Wagner Jorig found this very strange, since it was generally accepted at the time that syphilis symptoms only ever got worse, not better. He found the timing also to be suspicious, and figured that maybe the heat of the fever may have been helpful in damaging the pathogens enough to help cure the patient's symptoms. To test this theory, he did some very bold experiments, of which the ethics are honestly to some degree questionable. He began giving his mentally ill syphilis patients fevers from other diseases on purpose. While on one hand, these patients were vulnerable, could not consent, and likely did not have their loved ones consulted, I can sympathize with him wanting to find a cure, even one as dangerous as inducing fevers on purpose. He started off by giving patients strep throat at first, then tuberculosis, and finally settled on malaria, which was known to cause fevers and at least had an actual cure available at the time. In what must have seemed miraculous, a large number of patients had significantly better mental states after coming out of their fevers, but the toll was also quite heavy. About 15% of his patients that he treated with this died. This treatment came to be known as pyrotherapy, and while it may sound quite insane by today's standards, keep in mind that at the time, mental illness caused by syphilis was considered incurable. For the first time ever, there was a cure for a form of severe mental illness, even if it was dangerous. A decade later, Wagner Jorig took home a Nobel Prize for his work. And so unsurprisingly, a lot of people heard about pyrotherapy and its effectiveness against these symptoms. Although today we understand enough about fevers, syphilis, and mental illness to know that fever therapy would only work on syphilis symptoms, since they were being caused by the germ, back in the 1920s, most of that information was not yet discovered. So, when fever therapy began working for psychosis, even if only for syphilis-infected patients, psychiatrists decided to try it on other patients with similar symptoms, hoping that maybe it would cure them too. Unfortunately, because there were no syphilis microbes causing the disease, waiting to be killed by a fever, it didn't work, but it did still kill numerous patients since, well, malaria. After pyrotherapy, there were other treatments, which also did not really work. Manfred Sackel, in the year 1927, was experimenting on drug addicts using insulin, which regulates blood sugar in the human body. He noticed that when addicts were accidentally given higher doses of insulin, their blood sugar would drop severely, causing an hours-long coma. However, when patients awoke, they were usually calmer and didn't exhibit extreme behaviors that were often seen in addicts. With this observation and noting that some mental illnesses had similar symptoms to those of addicts, Sackel thought that maybe these induced comas could be useful for treating mental illness. He began dosing schizophrenia patients with insulin, and putting them into comas on purpose, sometimes for as long as 6 days in a row. To his delight and my concern, his patient's psychotic symptoms diminished, and they showed supposed signs of improvement, at least outwardly, and probably because they were being deprived of energy until they passed out. Unsurprisingly, putting people into comas by dropping their blood sugar suddenly is pretty dangerous. His patients often suffered from permanent brain damage, obesity because they were having their blood sugar manipulated constantly, and even death. However, proponents of this method argued that the brain damage was actually good because it made patients less hostile, which, while maybe technically true, definitely misses the point that they were actively harming patients. Unfortunately, coma therapy became widely adopted in the United States and Europe by the 40s and 50s, and it was seen as progress just because it was something, anything, that psychiatrists could do to reduce symptoms. Over time, though, studies would show that improvements were usually temporary, and that insulin-induced comas were not, by any measure, a real cure. These represented some of the early attempts at treatments for mental illness, which, while either very specific in the case of pyrotherapy, or only temporarily providing benefit in the case of insulin-induced comas, were genuine advancements in treatment. And they were especially important in providing hope that there could be some biological cure for these diseases. These treatments carried serious risks, and many of the ethics of the experiments were definitely questionable, but the work is important nonetheless. Next week, we'll keep talking about attempts at treating mental illness, but specifically using surgery. As always, thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed what you've been hearing, please let me know with the links in the show notes, or tell a friend. And also, as always, thanks to Jojo Tang for editing, Angie Lee for our cover art, and Muse Open for this music.